8:01 on a Monday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Let's go right to the phone lines now. Joined as we are every Monday on this program, happy to have him, former Canucks defenseman. You see him on the weekends on Sportsnet's national NHL coverage. Kevin Bieksa joins us now. Good morning, Kev. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you doing?
We're good, thanks. And thanks for taking the time to do this, as always. Obviously, the big story, not just locally, but across the league, is the current state of the Vancouver Canucks as it pertains to the COVID-19 outbreak the team has had. Have you had a chance to speak to any of your former teammates? I know there's only a couple now in Edler and Horvat, or anyone within the organization, about what's going on within the Canucks as they battle through this new Brazil variant of COVID-19.
Well, I've reached out to a few, and I mean, it's a tough situation. There's not much I can say. I know the majority of them are stuck in a hotel right now, isolated from their families, which is very tough. And some guys obviously are getting it harder than others. So there's some health concerns there and some physical pain. But it's, again, a reminder of the world we're living in right now, right? There's still a global pandemic in effect, and Vancouver caught it, and it spread pretty good throughout that team. So it just shows how quickly that can happen.
Now, we've spent a lot of time today talking about what's going to come next. And I think a lot of people, while trying to appreciate what the club is currently going through, also looks and realizes that the Canucks and the NHL are going to be in a real jam when this thing clears up because of the condensed schedule, because there's so many games left to be played, and because of, quite frankly, where the Canucks are in the standings. Like, the playoffs sure do seem like an awful ways off in terms of trying to make up the points and the games played. Are you hearing anything in particular? Do you have any thoughts on the matter about what might happen or what should happen, given that we are in a very unprecedented moment here? The only other outbreak of this magnitude happened at Dallas, but that happened in training camp and early in the year, and they, again, weren't dealing with the Brazil variant of this disease.
Yeah, you're just running out of time to adjust the schedule. That's the problem right now. The playoffs have to start by a certain time, and we're, already getting into midsummer by the end of it. So I don't know. It's going to have to be. This is unprecedented. So I'm sure there's no blueprint for it. But it's coming down to where the four teams are almost pretty much set that are going to make the playoffs out of the North, and it's just going to come down to how much do they care to make up all those games. It's not just the Canucks schedule. It's every team in the North Division schedule that's going to be altered and condensed. And you look at it, some of the schedules just look brutal. Mm-hmm. Where, you're playing four or five games in a week, and it's just, I don't know how real and how sustainable that is moving forward.
Our poll question this morning is, should the Canucks even try to play another game this season? And 74% of voters say no. So that's the fan perspective. What do you think the players are thinking on the Canucks? If you could put yourself in their shoes, would you be upset if they just said, bag it, we're done?
Well, I guess that depends how I'm feeling if I'm on the Canucks. Like, if there's some guys that literally can't get out of bed and, are going to take a month to recover, and you're essentially just going to fill it, the Canucks, with all the minor league players, and it's going to be an AHL team representative, then why would you play the rest of the games? Right? Well, there's no fans in the building. Mm-hmm. I know there's probably still a little bit of money to lose there, but if you're not able to roster your pretty close to your NHL group, then why would you play? That 70% though does surprise me. That I would think that the fans would want them to put some sort of product on the ice, but again, the severity of the situation is some of these guys might not be ready to play in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or even a month. So if that's the case, if you're not going to have Bo Horvat and Thatcher Demko and Alex Edler ready to play in a month, then I can see just, calling it a season.
We're speaking to Kevin Bieksa here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Kevin is a presentation of Andrew Sherritt Limited, your plumbing and heating wholesaler, a proud family-owned BC company helping local business since 1892. Now, Kevin, we've talked a lot about the condensed schedule and the grind that it takes on players, and I know that during your playing career, you never went through something quite like this, but you still experienced a lot of games in a short period of time, the grind, especially when it comes to the playoffs, where essentially you're playing, tooth and nail hockey every second night. Can you walk some of our listeners through what that's like, what kind of toll that takes trying to play that many games in a short window, especially when the intensity gets ratcheted up as you get closer and closer to the playoffs, and then obviously into the playoffs.
Well, I think in the middle of the game, it doesn't affect you as much, like maybe towards the end. But I think once you're in the rhythm and once you're in the, you know, you're in the scenery and you're warmed up and the adrenaline's kicking, I think you're good. I know even though there's a lot of games in a short amount of time, but where it gets you is there's just no time to recover. So after the games, you know, usually you can get into the gym and ride the bike and do a workout. I know Vancouver likes to have workouts after games and then come in the next morning and just do something light. You know, you're just not able to do that stuff when you're playing so many games. And if you're a big minute guy, your body is just so exhausted by the end of it that you can't really do much. And then recovery just gets condensed and there's just not enough time to get your body back to normal. There's not enough time to do all the maintenance on it that you need to do. And it slowly breaks down. And I remember going through a couple stretches where, and mentally you tell yourself, I don't care, I'm not tired, but you start to feel it. You start to feel it physically. You start to feel it in your mind and your decision-making a little bit. But there were stretches where, you know, I prided myself on when I was playing, you know, big minutes, 25, 26, 27 minutes some nights, I would still go into the gym afterwards and ride a bike. And if I was still tired, I would just do it for optics, just to show my teammates and whatever, if the coaches were watching or not, that it doesn't matter how many minutes I play, I'm still going to get into the gym. Well, you know, when you're piling on the 27, 28 minutes at a time for, you know, long, long stretches, there were times after games, I remember just sitting on the ground in between the lounge and the locker room and just not being able to move. And you just get exhausted. But in the middle of the game, during the game, you're all in. The adrenaline's firing, you're kicking, you're good. It's just after the game and in between before the next game. Just gets condensed more and more.
Did you ever have a time when it was 2 or 3 hours until game time and you're like, my legs are dead right now?
Yeah, maybe, but I would keep that to myself. I remember when Keith Ballard came to us and he said, Ryan Suter, who obviously plays monster minutes for his whole career, he would come in every day and guys would ask him, like, aren't you tired? You just played 32 minutes last night. And he'd say, nope, not tired, not thinking about it, just tell my body every day that I feel great. And he would just convince himself. It was a mindset. And I really believe you can control that with your mindset, just never succumbing to it, never believing that you're tired, just every day coming to the rink. And there are very few times before the game that I felt, you know, this is I'm exhausted. This is not going to be a game. The most tired ever was after a game actually was my first playoff game, went to 4 overtimes against Dallas back in 2006. And I just remember in between periods of getting quieter and quieter in the room and, you know, there's nobody talking. Guys are lying on the ground, legs up. Roger Takahashi's shoving orange peels down our throats. It was just, it was a really tough time. And after that game, no celebration. Guys were just exhausted. And, you know, those feelings, like, you don't get them all the time, but certainly with this condensed schedule, it'll get to that point.
Well, Kevin, I don't want to try and compare our experiences to yours, but Mike and I were in the stands for that Dallas game, and do you know they shut off the beer sales in the third period? So you can't even get a drink, right? Like, so you start to sober up in the first overtime, second overtime, third overtime, fourth overtime. You're dead sober. You even got maybe a bit of a headache. So that was a grind. I'm glad you guys pulled that one off.
So you guys were the real victims of that game, the fans.
It's true. Yeah.
Like, we were.
I understand you were tired and everything.
I don't think there was a scoring chance for the first 3 overtime periods.
We had slight headaches by the end of the game. So
the pace of play, it's funny. There was a little bit of a reversal in the middle of the game. Like the beginning of the game, the first liners were the first liners. And at the end of the game, the fourth liners were the first liners. they were the guys with all the energy. So they're just buzzing around. And you're looking at these guys. You're like, how does this guy have so much energy? And Mike Modano can't even move. Like Mike Modano was skating around saying to guys, will somebody just friggin' score? Yeah. Like, I don't care who wins. It's game one. I remember him saying that was my first playoff game ever. And I'm thinking, we're going to win at all costs. Like, I'll die, you know, before I lose this game. And there's Mike Modano skating around saying, somebody just score already.
We're speaking to Kevin Bieksa here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You know, it's funny, Jason alluded to one of our experiences. The one that always stands out for me is we were covering the Cup Final in 2015 between Chicago and Tampa Bay. And I just remember, and it was Steve Stamkos in particular because he had grown that gigantic goat beard, but how emaciated he was by the time they got to the Cup final. And you heard the stories coming out that these guys, after a game was done, like they're just too exhausted. They're almost too exhausted to eat. Like, they get their meal packed by the team to take home and try and get some fuel in you. But they said that all they want to do is sleep. And you see these guys, and I remember when Chicago won, going into the dressing room afterwards, like, they look like emaciated is the right word, because it's such a grind and you don't even have time to properly refuel in between games. You're just trying to rest.
You know what it is? It's a combination of the physical and the emotional. There's people right out here listening probably that are marathon runners, and they're like, oh, those guys are so weak. You know, I can run a marathon and, you know, 3.5 hours and be okay after that. It's like for some people that go to those meetings where you're just like, you're just grinding, you're thinking and you're brainstorming and you're having conversations and your mind's working so hard. And then you go home after like a couple hours of a meeting and you're just exhausted. Right. Well, like, put those two together now. Put like the mental grind and like the emotional grind of like every single play is such a huge deal. You're like, you're ultra focused every single shift for 3 hours, and then throw a marathon in that as well. So now you're physically tired too. So that's, and then do that for 2 months in a row.
Right.
So that's what people don't understand. Like, I think a lot of people just kind of look at it like, oh, it's, yeah, physically, you guys train for your whole life for this. You should be able to do this. Well, the physical part, yeah, like, it's tiring, but I think it can be overcome. But it's the emotional and the mental part of playing in the Stanley Cup Finals where there's so much on the line. And every single play can dictate the outcome, and you always have to be mentally sharp.
Do you feel that during the game, or is it after the game that you feel that? Like, I think about what you guys must have been feeling Game 7 against Chicago, where, you know, if you lose that game, that is one of the great collapses in NHL history. That
no,
you would
settle down. Settle down.
It would have been if you had lost that. Up 3-0 on Chicago, President's Trophy winners, this team that was supposed to be the one in Vancouver is finally going to get it done. And then if you would have blown 4 straight to Chicago?
It was the defending Stanley Cup champion. We're not talking about like the number one seed losing. Anyways.
See, you're in denial. Well, that's how you protected yourself mentally, just saying that it wasn't a big deal.
You're ridiculous right now, but the one thing about that game, I've told people that's the least favorite hockey game I've ever been a part of because
of the pressure.
One of those, I just wanted to blink my eyes and the game to be over and us winning and moving on to the next one. Like, I wanted nothing to do with that game. We lost 3 in a row, like you just said. You know, we're up. We're pretty comfortable all game. Like, we're up. And then Burrows gets the penalty shot, and we're like, okay, if he scores this, we're up 2. We're good. Misses on the penalty shot. You know, penalty at the end of the game, and Taves goes down and makes just a heroic goal, like a 1-on-2 with like a bit of a lucky bounce. I've watched that goal over a million times, but we're going into overtime and we're just thinking like this is the worst. Like, you're right. Like, we're not thinking this is the greatest collapse of all time, like the world's going to end, but we're thinking this is the end of a lot of our Vancouver Canuck careers. So, yeah, that game sucked, but then again, at the end of the day, it was the most excitement, most joy I've ever had in my entire life on the ice. Like, that celebration, if you watch everybody in that celebration, it's genuine, right? Like, guys don't know what to do with themselves. They're running around. Like, watch like Henrik Sedin in that. Like, he's running around, he's doing like fist pumps, he's got the big smile. Like, he just doesn't know what to do because he's so happy. And that's the way everybody, I'm sure, felt in the organization.
Well, from a fan perspective, I watched all those games with my buddies, and we watched them at our same friend's house, and we nicknamed the room where we watched them the panic room, because that's what we were doing the whole time. We were just kind of trapped ourselves in a room. And when Burrows did score, that was probably the most I've ever celebrated after a goal, like, ever, including 2010.
That's because you probably didn't run out of beer at your buddy's house.
No, right? We didn't.
Because it was only the first overtime, so you're still right in the middle of it. You're still putting them back.
Yeah, we were actually, oh, is the game over? Oh, good for them. They won. Yeah. No. Kevin, I wanted to ask you about the Calgary Flames. What's wrong with these guys? No, because it's hilarious. So there's two things. So the Canucks aren't going to make the playoffs. There's two things I want. I want Calgary to miss the playoffs, and I want the Leafs to choke in the first round. It looks like I'm going to get at least one. We'll have to see about the other one. What is going on with the Flames?
Well, misery loves company. So it's funny how you're asking me about them, because I do a show on Wednesdays in Calgary, and and they always ask me about the Canucks as well. So you guys love to talk. And you want to know what's something that's super scary is I've been doing this show all season now. The people of Calgary are starting to actually like me. Like, I'm kind of, like, winning them over, and I'm not even trying to. I could care less if they like me, but they're actually starting to like me, so I'm kind of working the full side of the fence, which I'm not proud of. But anyways, obviously loyal Canucks fan and die, you know, ride or die Canucks.
Right.
The Flames, yeah, that goes without saying, right? But the Flames, I don't know. Like, I just thought this team was fizzled out anyways at the start of the season. But they had, like, a better playoff, and me and Brian Burke would argue about this during the playoffs. He still thought that they were a pretty good team and a contender, and I'm saying, Burke, like, you're nuts. Like, these guys are done. Like, these guys were done 2-3 years ago. I just didn't think that they had the right guys in the right positions to make a long run, and they go on a little bit of a run last year. Not as good as the Canucks, but a little good run. So I think it kind of just gave some false hope for them this year. I think they expected to come out of the gates and actually contend, and I couldn't believe when I saw some people picking them to win the North Division. I had them at the very bottom. I had Ottawa and them at
really?
The very bottom. So I did. I just didn't think that they had the guys. And I know they brought in Tanev and Markstrom, which helped. But those guys aren't the problem. Those guys are like two of their best players this year. So it's just a team that has an identity crisis. And it's a team that has to figure out where they're going. You know, you bring Daryl Sutter in. Well, you bring him in to a core, into a group that maybe that's not his kind of group. Like, mm-hmm. He's trying to change those guys and make them play his way, but they're not guys. Those aren't guys, no, not all of them, that like to play Daryl Sutter hockey. So I'm sure in the summer they'll tinker with the lineup a little bit, and Trev Living will make a couple adjustments, and they'll maybe get a more Daryl Sutter-suited team for next year.
You know, it's funny. We had this conversation before you came on, and we've had it a few times before about the team. I'm glad you brought up identity because – I kind of feel like there's one faction of the team that you could be skill-based and a skill-forward team with Gaudreau, Monahan, Lindholm, on the back end, probably Hanifin. And then you've got a completely different faction, which is like more of like the rustic Calgary cowboy ass-kicker stuff with like, you know, Tkachuk, Dubé, Mangiapane, Luch is still there. And it's almost like those two factions are kind of at odds with one another because every time I watch Calgary, I ask the same question. What are these guys trying to be? What are they as a team? And I never have an answer.
And I think we all agree that Calgary at their best was that team that was hard to play against.
Yes.
The team that made it to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2004 with the Dinla. Like, that was a hard-nosed team. Big defenseman, tough. Everyone battled. Like, their skill guys were Craig Conroy and Jerome Iginla and Damon Lankow. Like, those guys all played the game pretty hard. So maybe not Conroy as much, but Lankow fought, and Iginla was as tough as anyone. So that was their skill guys back then. You're right now, like, you can't expect Johnny Gaudreau to go out there and finish his checks and play hard-nosed hockey.
Play heavy hockey when you're 150 pounds.
Yeah. You're not going to get the best out of him. It doesn't go into his skill set. You know, Sean Monahan, you expect him to play hard and compete, but again, he's not a guy that's going to go out there and run guys over. Right. Lindholm, so again, you have to find a happy medium. You have to find a blend, and you have to put guys in situations where they can succeed. And you're right. They're caught in limbo right now with what kind of team they want to be.
Kevin, this was awesome. As always, man, thanks a lot for doing this. We appreciate it. We'll talk again next Monday.
Yep. Stay safe, guys.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks.
Kevin Bieksa here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Kevin is a presentation of Andrew Sherritt Limited, your plumbing and heating wholesaler, a proud family-owned BC company helping local businesses since 1892. 1892. That's a long time.
Are you surprised how much he pushed back on the fact that it would have been like a giant collapse? A
little bit. I thought he just would have like joined.
Yeah, that would have been pretty bad, wouldn't it?
Classic media narrative. Yeah. But I like that he called, what did he call you, delusional?
Yeah.
I said you're in denial. That's what he said.
No, I said he's in denial.
Oh, you said he's in denial.
He called me delusional. I said, you're in denial.
It's nice that after two hits with Kevin Bieksa, we've already resorted to childish name calling.
He said you guys suck that you're delusional.
That's right. He loves our podcast, though. I told him we were big in Japan, and he's like, I'll check it out. Okay, speaking of the podcast, you can download it. Hours 1 and 2 are already up at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We're working on Spotify. Coming up, we're going to talk to an epidemiologist. We're going to go a little bit outside the norm of the Halford and Brough Show here. Daniel Coombs is an epidemiologist at the University of British Columbia. He has expertise in mathematical models of pandemic growth and control. Very befitting that we bring him on now because, of course, we are talking about the Vancouver Canucks, the Brazil variant of COVID-19, and how highly transmissible it is. Daniel Coombs next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. /8:28 on a Monday, a holiday Monday. Maybe some of you are golfing today, taking advantage of no work, no school. Gonna hit the links. Is that what they call it? Hit the links?
Yes, it is. You know they say that.
I know. Do you remember when we were at NBC and we used to have to do these videos? So it would be an additional component. We'd do the pro hockey talk, but then we'd also have to do PHT Extra. And it would be Jason and I sitting there, and a couple of the producers that we had very much wanted us to do the classic TV sports trope, which is this guy thinks X, but this guy thinks
this
Y.
This guy thinks he's crazy to think that.
They'd put us in sport coats and we get on there. And I do remember one of the guys who wasn't all that familiar with hockey always used to be like, yeah, just be natural. It's just a couple of guys talking puck. I'm like, no one says that, first off. I've never said to any of my buddies, do you want to go to the bar, meet up for some beers, and talk some puck tonight?
Yeah.
Nobody. Not shockingly.
Your buddy would be like, have you had a head injury or something? What's going on with you?
Not shockingly, those hits didn't work very well. Anyway, I brought up golf at the start of this. If it's a holiday Monday and you're out playing golf, a reminder, you can get Great Vancouver Golf for less. Go to discountgolfcard.ca for all the details and to order your Vancouver discount golf card today. Now, you played twice over the weekend.
Yeah.
Kudos to you.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you do?
Friday was no good. Friday was lost on the course.
No bueno.
And I was like, I'll just drink this round away.
Right.
Saturday was better.
Let's go to the phone lines now. We spent a lot of time today talking about the Vancouver Canucks and their current COVID-19 outbreak. Joining us right now, UBC epidemiologist Daniel Coombs on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Daniel. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks.
Thanks for doing this and taking the time today. I'll let the listeners know that you have a variety of fields of expertise. One is mathematical models of pandemic growth and control. So it's fitting that we get you on today after a weekend in which we learned that the COVID-19 Brazil variant has spread throughout the Canucks in very rapid fashion. Now, I know that the Canucks as a team are a small sample size, but is that sort of a good indicator or a fair indicator to relay or to tell folks just how transmissible this particular variant is?
Well, yeah.
Right.
It's definitely evidence in that direction, right? We have really, really good evidence that the UK strain, the B117, that you may have heard about, is more transmissible. But this Brazilian P1 variant, there is evidence. It's not such high quality. But the fact that you see so much transmission, you know, in sort of a small environment, and also one where they're doing a lot of testing and they're taking the protocol seriously, is actually pretty surprising. I'd say it's evidence in that direction for sure.
What makes a virus more transmissible?
Right. So again, for the P1, I'm not 100% sure, but with the B117, it does bind onto those receptors on the cells in the lungs a little bit in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a biological thing. You know, it's down at the scale of the molecules on the cells in the lungs and the way that the virus is actually able to bind onto those and then gain entry into the cells. Or there is the possibility that it's just a little bit more stable somehow, you know, in the environment where after somebody breathes it out, that it's able to stick around for just a little bit longer. I would lean towards the former of those things, yeah.
How challenging is it to answer these questions when we're learning about these viruses, these variants, in real time? Like, you can't just be like, well, 20 years ago this happened, so we know that for sure. Now it's like, 20 minutes this happened, and that's new, so we have to take that into account too, because the initial studies or the initial looks into things, they might not always be accurate. It's just you're dealing with the best information that you have.
That's right. And one thing about this pandemic is it crosses so many kinds of expertise as well, right? So you've got, you know, social and psychological sciences about how people behave, you know, in when there's a disease spreading, and then you've got the molecular things I was talking about. Then you've got the whole field of vaccine development, and then evolution of the virus. And, you know, it's like the whole world of sort of science and medicine and social science kind of all, you know, if you wanted to understand the whole epidemic, you'd really have to, you know, you'd have to be an expert in so many mm-hmm. different areas, right? And, you know, different people, you know, at UBC, we've got a team and we talk and there's different expertises there, but it's even there, we don't really have every piece to put the puzzle together. Yeah. And it is tough, right? You know, you have to deal with evidence that's coming out from different countries around the world, and mm-hmm. you don't necessarily know the people that you're reading the evidence from. And, you know, is this a high, you know, one of the first things you have to do is think, is this high quality or do I have my doubts here? And so you have to read it all with a critical mind. It's not well established. But I will say this is some of the questions that people ask, if you ask them about the flu, we would also have doubts, you know. I mean, there's been such intense study on COVID that we know a lot about COVID. And it sort of brings into focus the things we don't know about the flu as well or other respiratory diseases.
We're speaking to UBC epidemiologist Daniel Coombs here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Now, Daniel, we spent a lot of time talking about the NHL's response to the team-wide outbreak with the Vancouver Canucks and what protocols will be moving forward. There was a memo sent around the league on Saturday reminding everyone to stick with the practices and protocols as outlined at the beginning of the season to combat COVID-19. Now, I was reading an article you were quoted in the Vancouver Sun over the weekend, and you said basically until something stops the virus from growing anymore. And there's two options, vaccines and human behavior. And so I circled back to thinking about the National Hockey League, because this is something new now. Like when they had their other team outbreak of this size, it was with the Dallas Stars, 17 players earlier in the season. Now we're dealing with a variant that spread throughout a team. And I do wonder if it's something that they can address by trying to add or amend protocols, or if it's one of these things where, I hate saying it so glibly, but you almost have to like let the virus virus.
Yeah. I've seen the protocols, and they're really thorough, right? You know, they have testing every day. They have rapid game day testing. That, you know, there's so many pieces there. The masking restrictions, you know, and so you start to think, well, it's actually, you know, this is going to be 80-90% effective. This other piece is 80-90% effective, and you think, oh, that's a really good plan, because you've got so many sort of levels of protection here, layers of protection. And then you think, well, you know, if you multiply that out across all the clubs in the NHL, and then over the whole season, and then you realize, you know, that event that's pretty unlikely by itself starts to look like, yeah, that could actually happen, right? And mm-hmm. and so you start to see that. I mean, I would say, you know, with the Canucks, you know, it just makes you realize that nothing you do is going to be perfect. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? Test people for the virus twice a day? You know, mm-hmm. and even then the tests are not, you know, completely accurate, right? So it's like a series of unlikely events, but it's unlikely, but in another view, actually over all the clubs and over the whole season, and considering how much COVID there is in North America, it actually ends up probably being fairly likely that something like this would happen. So then you got the question, is should you change the protocols? And you know, I assume that the Canucks and the NHL are trying to figure out how they could do this. I mean, to me, really the only weak point is kind of that the players are living at home, you know, but is mm-hmm. that, you know, I mean, what you want the players to be like prisoners, right? And come out and just play for our pleasure, you know, when we want it. You know,
yeah. I don't think they'd agree to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Where are we headed as a province right now? When you look at this variant, what does the next month or so look like for us?
I hate to be alarmist, but I'd say it's looking pretty bad in terms of cases. You know, as the variants become established, I think it's unlikely that the cases are going to go down. You know, as I said before, unless something changes, which is, you know, if they bring in more restrictions, if people take the restrictions we have really, really seriously, that would obviously be a great help. You know, we have vaccinated a lot of the most vulnerable people now, and that continues, and that's fantastic. I think the province is doing a really great job in getting those doses out in an appropriate way. But I think we're going to see a lot of cases, and what I'm hoping is that those cases don't turn into, you know, people in their 50s and 60s, and some younger people too, that they don't turn into people spending time in hospital, and these numbers in the ICU are concerning, right?
The story is still yet to be written on a number of fronts, both with the Canucks and then the province in general. Daniel, thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Be well, be safe, enjoy the rest of your Monday, and hopefully there's better news ahead.
Yeah, you too. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks. That's UBC epidemiologist Daniel Coombs here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You know, I was just kind of formulating, crystallizing the thought as I was talking to Daniel there. But the league, in addition to figuring out what it's going to do with the Canucks, now also has to be acutely aware and highly concerned about this particular variant and this situation happening with another NHL club.
And I would say mostly in Canada.
Right.
Because by the time the first round of the playoffs start, we're not going to be fully vaccinated in Canada.
Right.
Other countries are way ahead of this, of us in this, and that's why you actually did have Friege and Siege, otherwise known as Elliot Freeman and Chris Johnson, talking on the broadcast over the weekend about maybe there's a bubble. Maybe the players are going to go back in the bubble.
The playoff bubble, yeah.
The playoff bubble. Now, I don't know if that would maybe just be a Canadian thing. So you have the North Division, 1 versus 4, 2 versus 3 in a bubble. Mm-hmm. And I suppose you could do the American teams just traditionally. Now, they did say that, look, this is just preliminary.
Yep.
Don't take what I'm saying and what they're saying as, oh, the NHL is going to go back to a bubble for the playoffs. But I think it would be discussed. If you look at what's going on with the Canucks right now, I don't want to say anything is lucky about the situation, but the league is somewhat fortunate that the Canucks are not in the thick of a playoff race, that they're probably going to miss the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you've got Toronto versus Montreal in the playoffs, and then one of the teams has a Canucks-like outbreak.
Yeah. What do you do?
That would be a massive, massive challenge for
the league. Dom was saying, I'm sure they've got contingency plans, but I can't imagine they're ideal or optimal. They're going to be trying to salvage a season at that point. So desperate times often call for desperate measures.
Mm-hmm.
One final segment to come on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We'll dive back into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket. We will read some of your what we learned, some of your other submissions throughout the day. We'll get to some of the stuff that we never got to on this program. Still haven't talked enough about Shohei Ohtani, I feel. We might do that. Who knows? The thing is, you got to stick around to hear what we're going to talk about next. So don't go anywhere. Halford Brough, Sportsnet. 650
is brought to you by GMC. With the industry first available carbon fiber composite pickup bed and a 2-inch factory installed suspension lift, the GMC Sierra AT4 is built to work smarter and play harder.
Ohtani cranks one out in the right center. It's gone. First pitch swing. And he gives himself a 1-0 lead.
Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. That was Shohei Ohtani yesterday. So he threw a 100-mile-per-hour pitch as the starting chucker for the Angels. Exit velocity on that dinger you just heard coming back from break, 115 miles an hour. And then Aaron texts in. The best thing about Ohtani yesterday wasn't the pitch or the exit velocity. It was the sound his bat made when he crushed that ball. Turn it up and listen a few times. It's like he's swinging a giant redwood and snaps it in half. Now,
Tell me when he pitches and hits his pitch.
Right. That would be
impressive.
So you're not impressed?
No.
You've got a pitcher who hits bombs, and you're out here saying...
He does what?
Meh. Meh.
Yeah.
First pitch.
Well, he didn't even last the whole game.
Well, he got injured.
Yeah, he got hurt.
But it was too much. Too much to do to pitch and hit.
I understand there's another league that dabbles in this, but I care not to acknowledge it. It is too much. First pitcher to hit second in the lineup since 1903.
When they were pitching 13 innings.
That's right.
When it was Jamie Moyer, I think, in 1903.
It's like, I'll hit second. Do I need to? They didn't even have batting helmets back then.
By the way, is there a more aesthetically pleasing sound than
So,
is that the best you can do? Was that the
Ohtani? That was the Ohtani.
That was the Ohtani. Okay, yeah. One more time.
It's a little abbreviated. That's fine. I don't want to be I'm going to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy, but I'm going to be that guy.
Go ahead.
I've read on about 3 different threads on social media that ESPN intentionally, they have like parabolic steroid mics behind the plate to not only capture but enhance those sounds.
The mics are juiced now?
Yeah, the mics are juiced. Okay. Baseball's juiced, mics are juiced. Mm-hmm. Anyway, still.
Bit of a that guy comment.
Really that guy comment. Like
you just can't enjoy it. I know. You can't allow yourself to say it was just cool.
I know.
You know?
I know. I regret it the moment I said it. And I called myself out for being that guy. Right
so,
away.
A big week ahead in the world of sports. No Canucks games. Not for a while, but I think we're going to learn more and more about the Canucks situation. And I don't know when we'll have an estimate of when they might be able to return to action, if indeed they do return to action. Mm-hmm. But we've got a big basketball game tonight. Gonzaga going for the undefeated, perfect season. First time since 1976 when that famous Indiana team coached by Bobby Knight did it. Mm-hmm. A bunch of others have tried. Few have even got to the Final Four. But Gonzaga, what's the line on the game tonight? Does anyone know?
Gonzaga, 4.5-point favorites.
4.5 over Baylor. So that's going to be really fun to watch. Hopefully we get another classic like Gonzaga UCLA was, even if it's, 50% of how good that game was. Yeah. The Masters starts on Thursday.
Yeah.
So that's something. The Masters for me is always the true sign of spring.
How many months between Masters? Five
maybe? It was in November. Right. So DJ won that. Dustin Johnson won in November. He is the favorite, but I think it's something like he's the 7-1 favorite. Right. There's a lot of guys that could win the Masters this year. And now we have to welcome Jordan Spieth back to contenders list. He was playing a lot better and finally got the win over the weekend. His first win since 2017. We'll have some Canadian content at the Masters, too. Corey Connors had a good tournament down in Texas. So there is a lot of sports coming up this week. It just isn't going to be hockey for the Vancouver Canucks.
First, do we have the call of Jordan Spieth capturing his first title in 4 years?
And in the state of Texas, Jordan Spieth breaks the winless drought.
Well, now he can compare himself to who he was today. Good for him. What a win.
Also, Corey Connors finished -2, tied for 14th at the same tournament. Sorry, -6. He finished -2 in the final round on Sunday. So good for him as well. Third, one thing you left out is while there won't be any CanCon, and by that I mean Canucks content this week because they're going to be off the ice, it is still trade deadline week.
Mm-hmm.
And a week today is going to be the annual NHL trade deadline, April 12th, and a reminder that all NHL trade deadline coverage is brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your local family and employee-owned wholesale distributor with locations across Western Canada. Purchase heating, plumbing, and irrigation supplies online at Sherritt.com. So
are the Canucks going to be able to make any moves?
I can't see it. Can you? Right now? If you were just to give me like not hedging, not that you hedge often, but or giving it like percentage, I just say no. Like, how?
Is Tanner Pearson on the list?
Of the COVID list?
Of the COVID list?
Sorry, I thought you were talking about the trade deadline list.
I mean, he's injured, but that was always the fact heading into this, and...
No Pearson.
No Pearson?
No. It's Boyd, Chatfield, Demko, Edler, Gaudette, Hamonic, Harlech, Holtby, Horvat, Hughes, McEwen, Michaelis, Mott, Myers, Roussel, and Sutter.
Mm-hmm. So now, we could get some more positives along the way, so he could theoretically
be added
to the list.
I don't see it from a Canucks perspective. I don't see it. I'm going to be very curious as to how minimal the movement will be. Did you see that the New Jersey Devils are now holding out Kyle Palmieri from playing because they're anticipating a trade? I think his agent, Brian Bartlett, went on Twitter over the weekend and threw that out there. So there'll be some moves.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate because let's say the Canucks can't trade, they can't get anything for Tanner Pearson, and then they can't come to a contract agreement with him. It's yet another asset that just walks away for nothing,
I mean,
right?
You put it on the pile, but but I'd be very hesitant to add it to the pile.
No. Okay.
I know what you're saying.
But it would be on the pile, whether it's management's fault or not. It would be just yet another, what do we call it? The assets that have died on the vine in Vancouver, and there have been quite a few of them. Mm-hmm. And Jim Benning got kudos for sort of righting the wrong on the Gabranson trade that he made by getting Tanner Pearson for Gabranson, and that was a good trade. Mm-hmm. And Pearson has been a useful player for the Canucks. But if they can't sign him and they don't get anything for him at the trade deadline, you can say, yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and blame Jim Benning for that because extenuating circumstances, sure, but that doesn't help the Canucks.
Once again,
you're in a whole situation of, is Jake Virtanen going to be back next season, or will they have to use some buyouts? Jake Virtanen is eventually added to the list of assets that kind of die on the vine in Vancouver. That's not good. But I'm getting ahead of myself here.
A little bit. I mean, I suppose things could dramatically change because, remember, the efforts and accuracy of predicting things during COVID times has not been great. Things change on a minutely basis. So trying to suggest what will happen 7 days from now, which, of course, is the NHL trade deadline, it's a tough one to do. Okay, we're just about ready to wrap things up here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Don't change the dial at all today. Coming up, it's Scotty Rintoul and Karen Sermon. And at noon, they're going to be joined by Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Friedman. So you're going to want to hear that. Elliot will have whatever updates there are from the league today. A reminder, as we've said throughout the first week on the show, we're off at 9 a.m. That is usually when a lot of the news breaks from back east because, of course, that's noon Eastern. That's usually when the NHL's COVID-19 list comes out for the day. So there will be more news on this front, even if it's just small updates from a variety of outlets. Your job is to keep it right here on the home of the Canucks, right through Scotty and Karen, all the way through to this evening's show, The People's Show, with Randy, Sat, and Dan. We got to get out of here. We will be back tomorrow. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He has been Jason Brough. This has been Halford and Brough on Sportsnet 650.